So Krishna took Nanda Maharaj. Manakopal, could you take this? So Krishna took Nanda Maharaj from the abode of Varuna, and he returned home, and everyone was ecstatic to see him. Of course, they were ecstatic to see Krishna, but they were fearful about Nanda Maharaj, and they were seeing how wonderful Krishna again and again performs wonderful activities. Nanda Maharaj had been astonished to see for the first time the great opulence of Varuna, because he was in the kingdom of Varuna, the ruler of the ocean planet, and also to see how Varuna and his servants had offered such humble respects to Krishna. Nanda described all of this to his fellow cowherd men. So this was on the Dwadasi. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. 10. Nanda Maharaj was astonished to see the fabulous opulence of Varuna, the ruler of the ocean planet. The word tesham is plural in number to indicate that Varuna and his followers were offering obeisances to Krishna. After breaking the fast at the proper time, Nanda Maharaj sat comfortably and spoke to his friends and his relatives. And this is what they were talking about. The cowherd men, hearing about Krishna's pastimes with Varuna, they're considering, they're asking the same question again. How is it possible? What is Krishna? The last time they asked this question to Nanda Maharaj, the conclusion was that he was empowered equally with Lord Narayan. But now they've heard from Nanda Maharaj, who was present when Varuna Dev was glorifying Krishna. Now they're hearing the glories that Varuna has said. They've said, "Oh Krishna, O seer of everything, you see everything. Oh Krishna, you namastu bhagavate brahmane paramatmane nayatra suyate maya lokasrishti vakan pana." My obeisances to you. They're hearing from Nanda Maharaj that this is what Varuna said. My obeisances unto you, O Bhagavate, Namastubhyam Bhagavate, O Supreme Personality of God, the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Soul, Brahmane Paramatmane, Nayatra, within whom there is no trace of the illusory energy, Nayatra Suyate Maya, Lokasrishti Vakalpana, and which is the Maya, there's not one trace of Maya in you, and it's that Maya that creates the entirety of the universe. So they've heard this. When Nanda Maharaj is explaining that he heard Varuna speak these words, and they began to think, Krishna must be the Supreme Lord. And in their minds, O King, O Maharaj Prakrit, they were filled with eagerness. It's like when you find out you're a poor person and you find out that your best friend or someone who you love so much has unlimited money. With their love, it didn't diminish their love. They didn't think of how we're going to get something from him like that. But no, it's just natural that when there's someone who you love, the overflowing of your wealth pours to them. So they were very, very simple. With eagerness they thought, will the Supreme Lord bestow upon us his transcendental abode? They were wondering, in other words, they were wondering, what is our destination going to be? We love Krishna, he's the Supreme Lord. What is our destination going to be after we leave this world? How much auspiciousness must come to us by the mercy of Krishna. We'll read from Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. The coward men said, O Nanda, previously you told us that Gauga Muni had said that Krishna was like Narayan but not identical to Narayan. But now you have concluded that Krishna is God by directly hearing Varuna praising him. We think your son Krishna should fulfill the desires of your friends in this material world. Because beside being the Supreme Lord, Krishna is also the son of our brother, the son of our sister, the son of our daughter. In other words, we have so many village relations. Everyone is interconnected by marriage. So he's our relative. And we love Krishna. And Krishna loves us. And Krishna's reply to that is, O cowherd men, please take whatever you desire from the Supreme Lord. So this is how Krishna deals with the Brijbasi devotees, or all of his devotees. What do you want? Take, take, take. So one cowherd man said, we should take liberation. We should become residents of Vaikuntha, another said. Every cowherd man had a different desire. Although the cowherd man was seeing Krishna as God, it did not even slightly diminish the intimacy of their relationship with him. So this point we have spoken about again and again, and this is the specific or a specific quality of the Brijbasis. Their love is like a tidal wave, and viewing, being conscious of occasionally, his opulence does not diminish that love at all. It does not diminish the intimacy of their relationship with him. And that's how love of God and fortune is measured, the intimacy of relationship. However, that was not the case with Krishna's father, Vasudeva, and his friend Arjuna, whose affectionate relationship was disrupted by observing Krishna's majesty, his Aishwarya. Once upon meeting Krishna and Balaram, Vasudeva said, you two are not my sons, but the Supreme Lord. Today I surrender to your lotus feet. After seeing Krishna's universal form, Arjuna said, O my Lord, please forgive me for whatever I spoke, thinking of you as my friend. So they're thinking, what is going to happen to us? We're so fortunate. Everyone is wondering what's going to happen to them, their destination after dying, after leaving their bodies, after leaving this world. And the cowherd men are thinking, we're so fortunate because Krishna is the Lord, so surely he'll give us something wonderful. Surely we'll go to a wonderful place. Surely, surely, surely. Text 12. Because he sees everything. He knows everything. Itis vanamsa bhagavan. He knows everything. Vigyaya akhila drik. Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, automatically understood what the cowherd men were conjecturing, what they were wondering, wanting to show his compassion to them by fulfilling their desires. The Lord thought as follows. So we'll read first the purport to 12. So he wanted to understand. They wanted to understand. So understanding the minds of his relatives, his sanam, Krishna thought how to fulfill their desires. Since he knew about all the types of bliss available in Brahman, Vaikuntha, and Brajabhumi, Akiladrik, he saw all of that. According to the degree of his devotee's prema, Krishna usually covers or forgets his own majesty. But in this case, his Leela Shakti inspired him with full awareness of all his majestic forms simultaneously. So Krishna became fully aware of everything available in existence, all the types of bliss that were available. Because his Leela Shakti, he's given this independence to his Leela Shakti. And Krishna thought, because of tasting the rich sweetness of Krishna Prema, these cowherd men have understood that the attainment of Brahman and Vaikuntha are insignificant. Nevertheless, I permit them to realize the bliss of Brahman and Vaikuntha in order to fulfill the desires they are manifesting while playing the roles of an unintelligent human being. So Lord Krishna thought, and this is the next verse, text 13. Jano vailoka athasmin avidya kama kamabhi uchavasachu gathe sunaveda swam gatim brahman. Certainly, people in this world are wandering among higher and lower destinations, which they achieve through activities performed according to their desires and without full knowledge. Thus, people do not know their real destination. So there's a double meaning of this verse. One is the meaning in which Krishna is speaking to ordinary people, about ordinary people. They're wandering higher and through higher and lower destinations. Brahmanda Brahmate. And how do they achieve the different destinations, different bodies, different situations in different worlds? According to the activities they performed according to their desires, without full knowledge. These people do not know their real destination, what's going to happen. So that's the way of explaining it according to ordinary, about ordinary people. When applied to conditioned souls, this is from the end of the fairly long purport. Yeah. When this verse is applied to conditioned souls who are actually wandering throughout the universe, Krishna's statement that people are acting out of ignorance and lust is not mitigated by any deeper spiritual meaning. People in general are simply ignorant, and they do not seriously consider their ultimate destination. As usual, Lord Krishna is able to say many profound and complex things in a few simple words. How fortunate we are that God is not a dry field of energy, a transcendent, effulgent blob, or nothing at all, as various people would have it. In fact, He's the most wonderful personality of Godhead, full of absolute personal qualities, and certainly, whatever we can do, He can do better, as evidenced by His brilliant way of speaking. So, we'll read the first paragraph. Srila Jiva Goswami has elaborately explained how this verse applies to the eternally liberated residents of Sri Vrindavan, the Lord's abode. So we heard, just now we heard, and as the verse is directly translated, it's more applies to ordinary people, because these people do know their actual destination. They're performing activities on one level without knowledge, but on another level, it's the highest knowledge. The fruit of knowledge is their love for Krishna. And they don't wander from one destination to another like conditioned souls. So one of the philosophical principles of the Bhagavatam is the distinction between two types of illusions. So the Vrishabhasis are in one type of illusion, Yogamaya, and yet there is another type, Mahamaya, the spiritual and material states of existence, respectively. Although Krishna is God, the omnipotent, omniscient, supreme being, His intimate associates in the spiritual world love Him so much that they see Him as their beloved child, friend, lover, and so on. So that their ecstatic love can transcend the boundaries of mere reverence, they forget that Krishna is the supreme God of all the universes, and thus their pure intimate love expands unlimitedly. So this is true for all the Brijbasis. They are not tinged by the Maya of this world. They are not trapped by that Maya. They are not limited by that Maya. And thus their love, being in contact with Krishna's Ladini Shakti, expands unlimitedly, which means their intimacy expands unlimitedly, which means their ecstasy expands unlimitedly. And therefore, so that their ecstatic love can transcend the boundaries of mere reverence, they forget that Krishna is the supreme God of all the universe, and thus their pure, intimate love expands unlimitedly. One may consider their activities of treating Krishna as a helpless child, a handsome boyfriend, or a playmate to be a manifestation of avidya, ignorance of Lord Krishna's position as God. But the residents of Vrindavan are in fact ignoring the secondary majesty of Krishna and focusing intensely on his infinite beauty, which is the essence of his existence. From another paragraph of this purport. It should be remembered that the entire purpose of Krishna's Krishna's descent into this world is to attract living beings back home, back to Godhead. Two things are required for this: that his pastimes display the beauty of spiritual perfection, and that they somehow seem relevant and hence interesting to the conditioned souls of this world. The Bhagavatam often states that Lord Krishna plays just like a youthful actor, and he undoubtedly engages his eternal devotees in the dramatic presentation. Thus Lord Krishna, he muses to himself that people in this world certainly do not know their ultimate destination. And with an obvious touch of the facetious, he also thinks in this way about his own eternally liberated associates who are playing in this world like ordinary members of the cowherd village. They were actually not feeling assured that they were residents of the spiritual world. Rather, they were thinking of themselves as if they were ordinary human beings, as we're human beings, we're ordinary people of this world. Otherwise, the pastimes can't take place. Now we'll read the comment, or part of the comment of Vishwanath, where he says clearly, one cannot translate this verse as follows. The Brijbasis, who are wandering in various wombs from higher species to lower due to ignorance, desire, and action, do not know about Brahman liberation and Vaikuntha, which will be given by me. All the Brijbasis are Nitya Siddhas, eternally liberated associates of the Lord, who love Krishna in various relationships of intimacy. They are completely unaffected by ignorance, lust, or fruit of activities. The Srimad Bhagavatam says, the gopis who regarded Krishna as their son were not subject to the ignorance of material life. Lord Brahma says, what can you give to these Brijbasis who will not accept the position of liberation or Vaikuntha, even if you offer it? So therefore, this verse, in its simple meaning, as it is translated, does not actually apply to the Brijbasis. Here's another part of Vishwanath's comment. Krishna thought, all the desires and actions of my father and the Brijbasis are solely dedicated for my pleasure. Seeing me as their helpless child, they're completely unaware that I am the supreme God of all the universes. So all this is another way to translate, an anvay or an expanded way to translate this verse. They are completely unaware of avidya, that I am the supreme God of all the universes. Wandering, Brahman, in this land of Vrindavan, they have no knowledge of the higher destinations. In this way, the Brijbasis are completely unaware of their own exalted position as my eternal associate in Sri Vrindavan Dham, Swam Gatim, which is rarely achieved by others. When my father saw the opulence of Varuna, which is only material, he then considered this Vrindavan, which is the quintessence, the very essence of Vaikuntha, to be inferior to the planet of Varuna. It is just like the fool who, upon seeing the form and luster of an inferior pearl, considers a valuable first-class pearl to be inferior. Thus the cowherd men see themselves inferior to Varuna, and think liberation, attaining liberation, and residence of Vaikuntha is greater than the unique sweetness they relish in loving me as their son. Liberation and Vaikuntha both depend on me, but I am completely independent. Nevertheless, it is seen that sometimes I'm dependent on prema, though it is evident to all The Brijbasis do not recognize this. So this is what he's saying. So now he's going to do something wonderful. Thus, deeply considering the situation, the all-merciful Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, revealed to the cowherd men his abode, which is beyond material darkness. Purport. It is clear from this verse that the Absolute Truth dwells in his own eternal abode. Every one of us tries to live as comfortably as possible, surrounding ourselves with peace and beauty. How can we, in the name of logic, begrudge the Supreme Lord, our Creator, the supremely beautiful and comfortable abode known by people in general as the Kingdom of God? How could we say that he doesn't have an abode? We have one. We long for these things. Why wouldn't he have one? Srila Sridhar Swami comments on text 14. His own planet, identical with the Absolute Truth, known as Vaikuntha, which is beyond tamas, material nature, his own planet with which the cowherd men are related, the possibility of its being material is denied by the words beginning with tamasa. So he's going to show them something. Tamasa, gopanam, tamasa param, beyond material darkness. He's going to show them transcendental abodes. And ultimately, he's going to show us the nature of the Brijbasis, using them as always on one level for his purposes to teach us to display their unique love and their special position. He's going to show them first Brahman and then Vaikuntha, Goloka Vaikuntha. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments on text 14 as follows. Considering Sanchintya, the situation, because they were desiring, acting as if they were ordinary persons, knowing, not knowing their destination, desiring to know their destination, Krishna is going to show them Brahman. Considering the situation, he becomes aware by his Leela Shakti's arrangement, he becomes aware of all the bliss available in existence. And then he considers and decides out of his infinite compassion for the Brijbasis, he separated the cowherd men from Vrindavan, He removed them out of Vrindavan for a few moments and showed them his own attractive, charming spiritual planet, Loka Swam, Krishna Loka, the Agaloka Vaikuntha. Krishna did this to show them that the sweetness of Vrindavan was superior to Brahman and Vaikuntha. So he actually takes them out of Vrindavan for a few moments to allow them to experience these different higher spiritual forms of reality. And we'll hear their reactions. However, if the Brijbasis achieve Sayujya Mukti, merging in Brahman, it would be impossible for them to come out of it because your individuality isn't there, so there's nothing to pull you out. Then how would they ever again taste the sweetness of Vrindavan? Because Lord Krishna is Vibhu, all-powerful. He could take them out of Sayujya Mukti and Vaikuntha, which are both beyond the darkness of matter. 15. So Krishna has his own way of dealing with everything. And when he deals, he speaks, he acts on many different levels, for many different purposes. This is one of Krishna's wonderful characteristics. 15.
Satyam Gyanamanantam Yad Brahma Jyoti Sanatanam.
So Krishna then, Satyam, this is eternal, indestructible, Gyanam, knowledge, Anantam, unlimited, indestructible knowledge, Yad Brahma Jyoti, the effulgence, his own effulgence of the Absolute, which is Sanatanam, eternal. He took them out of Vrindavan and placed them into that at Akuragat. Brahma Riddha it is also called. Sages see Yadhi Pashanti Munayo. The Munis, they see that spiritual effulgence and trans Gunapaye Samahita, where the consciousness, when the consciousness is free of the modes of material nature, like you might take something, cloth or something, and dip it into the river. He dipped them into the Brahman bliss in that place. Purport. In text 14, Lord Krishna revealed to the residents of Vrindavan his own abode, the spiritual planet of Krishna Loka. This and innumerable other Vaikuntha planets float in the infinite ocean of spiritual light called the Brahma Jyoti. That spiritual light is in fact the spiritual sky, which Krishna also quite naturally revealed to the residents of Vrindavan. For example, if we want to show the moon to a child, we say, look up at the sky. See the moon over there in the sky? Similarly, Lord Krishna revealed the vast spiritual sky to the residents of Vrindavan, but as emphasized in text 14 and in the following text, 16, the actual destination of the Lord's associates was his own spiritual planet. Srila Swami comments, text 15. Because it is impossible for those who are covered over by material bodies to see such a thing. First of all, he revealed to them the identity of Brahman. Raise your hand if you'd like to be dipped into the ocean of Brahman for some time.
What?
Just wondering. Which is distinct from the material body and so forth, no suffering. This is described in the verse beginning Satyam. Satyam means unchecked. Jnana means does not matter. Ananta means unlimited. Jyoti means self-luminous. And Sanatanam means eternally existent. That Brahman which the Jnanis see when the material modes subside, he mercifully showed them. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments. That which the sages, the jnanis, see when the modes have desisted, and the basic methodology for all of you who wish to go to Brahman, the basic methodology is just slow down your mind. Slow it down so it stops. So you just experience existence. No anxiety. The mind is the cause of all problems, all anxiety. And in that way, one transcends. Because Vrindavan is also the identity of the ecstasy of Brahman. It's even sweeter than the same Vaikuntha, which was also such, because it is present in the midst of the illusory opulences of Maya. I think I'm going to have to read it here. The unlimited spiritual effulgence called the Brahma Jyoti in text 15. No, 15, read here. Satya means all-pervading, Jnana means non-material, Ananta means without limit. Sanatanam means eternally perfect, Nityasiddha. The Jnanis who transcend the modes, the Munis who transcend the modes of nature, Gunas, see the Brahman effulgence, the Brahma Jyoti in Samadhi. Brahman and Boma Vrindavan both have the nature of unlimited effulgent bliss, but the people on earth only experience the extreme sweetness of Vrindavan and not its awesome and majestic aspect, Aishwarya, due to the covering of Yogamaya. That means the people, meaning the Brijavasis. Just as a clay pot conceals a lamp shining within it, Krishna revealed the Brahma Jyoti far beyond the material world, and not the spiritual effulgence manifested within Vrindavan on this earth planet. Because it's also here. The form of Bhagavan Sri Krishna is much sweeter than the impersonal Brahman effulgence. This is confirmed by the realization of Atmaramas such as Sukadeva Goswami. What verse? Kovanti Itam Guna. Though the form of Bhagavan is also all-pervading, so he gave up everything, that realization for Krishna, as did the four Kumaras for Bhagavan realization. Though the form of Bhagavan is also all-pervading, he appeared localized in the form of medium-sized human-like. Though Bhagavan Sri Krishna is free from the six transformations of material nature, he seems to undergo birth, growth, and so on. Bhagavan is free from the six material disturbances of hunger, thirst, and so on, yet he seems to undergo hunger and thirst, perspire and become tired, express fear and bewilderment, and receive blows in battle. This is because Bhagavan, Sri Krishna, has unlimited inconceivable energies. Similarly, Vrindavan, like the body of the Lord, which spreads itself through millions of universes, as seen by Brahma, is also limited and localized. The Lord says, this Vrindavan, spread over five yojanas, is like my body. And although the scriptures proclaim that the moving and non-moving entities of Vrindavan are free from the six material disturbances, hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, old age and disease, and death, one sees to his astonishment that the men, animals, birds and trees in Vrindavan experience hunger, thirst, birth, old age, want and dissolution. So he shows them Brahman. And then the cowherd men, this is text 16. Were brought by Lord Krishna to the Brahma Ridda, made to submerge in the water, and then lifted up. From the same vantage point that Akura saw the spiritual world, the cowherd men saw the planet of the absolute truth. Purport. The unlimited extension of spiritual light called the Brahma Jyoti in text 15 is compared to a lake called Brahma Ridha, Radha. Lord Krishna submerged the cowherd men in that lake in the sense that he submerged them in the awareness of the impersonal Brahman. But then, as indicated by the word Udrita, he lifted them up to a higher understanding, that of the personality of Godhead in his own planet, as clearly stated here, Dudrisur Brahmano Lokam. They saw, just as Akura did, the transcendental abode of the Absolute Truth. And then the final verse. Nandamaraj and the other cowherd men felt the greatest happiness when they saw that transcendental abode. They were especially amazed to see Krishna himself there, surrounded by the personified Vedas who were offering him prayers. So they went to Brahman, and then they went to Vaikuntha Goloka. This becomes clear through the commentaries. And they became ecstatic there to see Krishna surrounded by the personified Vedas who were offering him prayers. So which sounds like the higher place? Which sounds like the higher place? They're amazed to see Krishna himself there. They felt the greatest happiness when they saw this Vaikuntha abode of Krishna, where Krishna was. And everyone was offering him prayers. This was param sukh. They were experiencing the greatest happiness there. But through our acharyas, we understand fully the actual situation. We'll read first the purport, then we'll read Vishwanath's comment, and finally we'll read a little of the comment of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Although the residents of Vrindavan considered themselves ordinary persons, Lord Krishna wanted them to know of their extraordinary good fortune. Thus, within a lake of the Jamuna River, the Lord showed them his personal abode. First, allowed them to experience Brahman, and pulled them out of that, and then brought him to his personal abode, Vaikuntha. There, while the cowherd men were amazed to see that the kingdom of God had exactly the same spiritual atmosphere as their own earthly Vrindavan. And that just as in their Vrindavan, Lord Krishna was personally present, in their unique vision, he was present as the Lord of the spiritual world. So they saw Krishna, they saw the same atmosphere of Vrindavan. And they saw Krishna there, who they were wondering about his identity for so long. And now they had concluded that he was the Supreme Lord and he could bring them to the highest platform after death, after leaving this world. They were so happy to see in that spiritual atmosphere after experiencing Brahman, they saw that Krishna, yes, look, we've heard how had been worshipped by Varuna. Now we're seeing that all the demigods, we had heard from the coward boys even, that Indra, with his thousands of eyes, and now we're seeing this, that yes, Krishna is worshipped. He is the Supreme Lord. The Vedas are offering prayers. Everyone is worshipping Krishna. But their mood is like the beloved son. He just loves his father, he loves his father, he loves his father, and his father happens to be the president of the country. And sometimes he sees his father, usually he plays with him, and just sits on his lap, and then sometimes he sees his father in the king's chamber or the president's chambers, and all the officials of state are coming in and officials from other countries are coming in, and he thinks, oh, my father is so wonderful. Not how fortunate I am that the president of the United States is my father. That the position of president evokes. But they're so happy. My father is so wonderful. So there Krishna, they saw. It's so wonderful that everyone, we know he's so wonderful. Now it's proved. Everyone loves him and worships him. He's so wonderful. As Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur points out, these verses emphasize that Lord Krishna did not merely show the cowherd men a sample of Vaikuntha planet, but that he specifically revealed his Krishna Loka, the greatest of eternal abodes and the natural home of the residents of Vrindavan, who loved Krishna more than anyone else did. So there's different meanings of all these things. We'll read from the comment of Vishwanath. Seeing Krishna Loka in the spiritual world, the cowherd men were amazed and filled with the highest bliss. They experience Krishna Loka to be the same as the Vrindavan on earth. It is just like a millionaire who, having lost all his wealth, becomes full of bliss on finding some clue to the wealth. They found that Sri Krishna, with his lotus face covered with drops of perspiration and worshipable by millions of their life heirs, was personally present as the Lord of the spiritual world. In their unique vision, they were astonished to see Krishna being praised by the personified Vedas. So, very mysterious comment, actually. So they were so amazed and astonished and filled with wonder and happiness to be again, after experiencing this Brahman, they were again filled in the atmosphere of Vrindavan. They were astonished to see Krishna in that position. Yes, he's being worshipped. And they became bliss filled by that. But so we can think that this is the highest position. But then there's the mysterious comment that he makes. It is just like a millionaire who, having lost all his wealth, becomes full of bliss on finding some clue to his wealth. So they lost all their wealth when they were in Brahman. Because what is their wealth? What is their only wealth? That is this special, unique love that they share with Krishna in the different rasas. And theirs is the the Vatsaliras. They'd lost that. That's the millionaire. He lost his wealth. And then, he says, he becomes full of bliss in finding some clue to the wealth. They didn't find their wealth when they went to this Vaikuntha planet of Krishna. They found the clue. There's Krishna again, our Krishna. But not exactly Krishna as we know him and deal with him, but rather Krishna being worshipped by all the demigods, fully worshipable Krishna. It is a clue to the wealth, not the actual wealth. And therefore, because their relationship with Krishna is still more wonderful than that. It's the most intimate part of the palace, not in the office, not in the, called the Dabar? What does Dabar mean? The court, the king's court. If you go to the Red Fort, you'll see a very opulent court of the emperor who used to preside there. There's a difference between presiding and residing. He didn't reside in the court, he presided over the court. So in this Goloka Vaikuntha, Krishna presides over the Vaikuntha. But in Vrindavan, who presides? It is the bhaktas, the devotees, who preside. And Krishna dances when they clap. I'll give you a sweet if you dance, Krishna. Who presides? Especially if Srimati Radharani, she is Vrindavaneshwari. And that's what we find out in the Rasalila section. Who really presides over Vrindavan? It is not Krishna. He is conquered. But throughout all of Braj, he is conquered. So therefore, when the residents of Vrindavan, in the last paragraph as it's translated here, of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment, he says, the cowherd men thought, upon seeing this wonderful Vaikuntha planet where Krishna was presiding as the most worshipable object of all the demigods, where have these effulgent beings come from? Because they're in a Vrindavan atmosphere, but yet these outsiders are there sort of ruining everything. Where have these effulgent beings come from? They are unknown to us, but we cannot ask them who they are. Though seeing us, Krishna does not display his boyish manners. He doesn't run to us. He doesn't embrace us with his two arms. This is what happens when Krishna sees the residents of Vrindavan in Vrindavan. He immediately comes. You ever see the little children do that? They come running and bang their bodies into their beloved parents and just hold them. And the parents just embrace them out of love. But Krishna is there and they're seeing Krishna there. And there's something in the atmosphere, some Aishwarya, or we can say a lessening of the love, the intimacy of the love, that doesn't allow them to walk over there. And Krishna doesn't immediately, upon seeing them, come running over and give them a big hug. So he does not display his boyish manners and run towards us and embrace us with his two arms. Any more than when the king is in the Daba, his son doesn't go running over to him all the time and hug him and play with him and can I ride on your back and this and that. Nor does the king go running over to his son and always, because that the atmosphere in the court is quite different. We also feel reluctant to approach him and take him on our laps. Today, Krishna has forgotten hunger and thirst. He's always hungry. He's always stealing food, stealing butter, stealing this, eating. And Krishna's standing there accepting the prayers of all the demigods And he seems to today forgotten hunger and thirst. And then he say, if Mother Yasoda was here, how could his mother live without feeding him? She would not be able, you don't bring Mother Yasoda into the court, because she'll just be walking, he's there presiding over the court as the king with the guards on this side and this and that. Oh, have you eaten enough? You're looking thin. You know, this wouldn't work. The intimacy would be out of place there. So they're amazed. So they went from Vaikuntha, the absence of ecstasy, to this where they, like the rich man who lost all his wealth, and there they saw Krishna, and the atmosphere of Vrindavan is there. And the hint of how to, of where the wealth actually is. They perceive that hint. And then, employing Leela Shakti, and Krishna, Yogamaya, then brought the Brijbasis back to earthly Vrindavan. And Rupa Goswami has explained this fact in a verse of Stavamala. May you be protected. May you be protected by Mukunda, who in order to teach the coward men that there is no place as sweet as earthly Vrindavan, he effortlessly showed them Krishna Loka in the spiritual world and then brought them back to earthly. Because then they were home. Full intimacy. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, just at the end of his comment. The planet which Sri Krishna showed the cowherd man is not simply another Vaikuntha, as we should understand from the use of the three phrases Swamgatim, Gopinam Swalokam, and Krishnam Cha. Swamgatim means that it is meant for them. In other words, that place is the personal abode of the coward men. The word Gopinam has the genitive case ending, by which there is the connection of the coward men with this planet. And by the word Swad indicates the privilege to be in such relationship. Similarly, by the words Krishna is accepted the fact that Krishna is present there in direct relationship with that place. Certainly, these phrases conclusively establish that this was not just another Vaikuntha. It is quite fitting that they became full in supreme ecstasy by seeing Golok, and that they became overwhelmed in amazement, because this abode is in itself the complete reality. Furthermore, the coward men think it is the object of our greatest pleasure to know that we and Krishna, who appeared as our son, are going to reside there in the future. So the spiritual world. So the intimacy where they were is the most wonderful and wonderful place where full intimacy takes place. Now, in conclusion, I would like to read of this chapter as described by Srila Jiva Goswami, beginning with Nanda Maharaj bathing. Convinced that strict observance of Ekadasi fulfills desires, Vraja's King Nanda, as he always had, fasted on that Ekadasi. Early the next morning, because although it was Dwadasi, and although it was still nighttime, the auspicious time for breaking the fast was almost over, kind-hearted Nanda confidently entered the Yamuna River to take his bath and perform auspicious rituals. Still in the water after his bath was completed, Nanda Maharaj, filled with faith in the Vedas, began to meditate on Lord Narayan with single-pointed concentration. From the time of his birth, his saintly heart had been devoted to Lord Narayan. Then, when he attained a son so like Lord Narayan, Nanda's devotion to the Lord increased even more. Then, as King Nanda was wrapped in trance, the servants of Varuna suddenly surrounded him and took him to their master's abode, effulgent and supported by many pillars. Varuna's underwater palace was situated in Rasatala Loka, and it was reached by passing through a great tunnel under the lake in the Yamuna. Had they known the exalted position of Krishna's father, Nanda, the servants of Varuna would not have brought him to their master's abode. What was Nanda Maharaj thinking? Nanda again and again thought, "Again and again I see the wonderful glories of my son, a son born to me because I have somehow become very fortunate, glories that filled me with joy and love." Again and again, Nanda thought, "Goddess Yogamaya arranged the arrival of Putana and all the other events in Sri Krishna's pastimes." So he was just completely enwrapped in his thoughts of Krishna. The servants brought Nanda before Varuna. Understanding Nanda's identity from his bodily features, and understanding that Nanda Maharaj was not in this world at all, but he was wrapped in meditation upon Lord Narayan, Varuna was filled with awe, fear, respect, and he praised Nanda. He offered him valuable garments and other gifts and had him sit on a glorious throne. Thinking Lord Krishna would not tolerate the capture of his father, Varuna stood at his palace door so he could see Krishna coming from far away. He was filled with fear. Now events in Braja will be narrated. That was what was happening when Nanda Maharaj entered the Yamuna. Now what was happening when Krishna entered the water from the point of view of the Brijbasis? The servants of Nanda, for whom Nanda was both their master and their great treasure, looked in the Yamuna's waters. But nowhere could they see Nanda Maharaj, the father and protector of Sri Krishna. They became frightened. They dove in the waters and searched in direction after direction. Not finding Nanda anywhere, they came out of the water and returned to Braja. Weeping, they entered Braja. Krishna, Balaram, and the other leaders of Braja approached the lamenting servants. Their hearts stunned to hear the news of Nanda's disappearance. Krishna and Balaram made the ground shake as they went eagerly running to the bathing place by the Yamuna. There, Sri Krishna became agitated, began to weep. He hugged Balaram and said, "Oh, my brother, please comfort and protect our mothers and protect everyone else until I return with father and make everyone happy. Only if mother is not allowed to come to this place will I have the power to be successful in my mission of rescuing our father." After speaking these words, Sri Krishna began his journey to bring back his father. He tightened his waistband. He assumed a ferocious feature that would shame the most powerful lion. Sri Krishna entered the river's water and he descended into the tunnel that led to Patalalok. Then Queen Yasoda and the other people of Braja touched Lord Balaram's feet and, eager to find Krishna, asked, "Where did your younger brother go?" And after thinking for a moment, Sri Balaram said to beautiful-eyed but overcome with worries Queen Yasoda, he replied by saying, "Oh, mother, please do not be tormented with worry. Your son will soon return, bringing father with him. He will bring happiness to all his kinsmen." Then Lord Balaram said to his own mother, Rohini, "Why do you attack me in this way? Have faith in my words. Comfort and protect Mother Yasoda, who at this moment is so overcome, she only has the power to breathe and no power to do anything else." considering Balaram's words a source of consolation, as they certainly had been when Krishna was fighting with Kaliya, the elders of Braja, by speaking many words, gave consolation and hope to Mother Yasoda. The people of Braja were in this mood. Are we dreaming? Are we awake? Have we fallen into a delirious swoon? Do we see a vision born of intoxication? Speaking these words, the people of Braja did not know what was happening to them. Their hearts became plunged into the great darkness of worries, and they called out, Oh, King Nanda! Oh, see Krishna, because Krishna had gone into the water and he had also disappeared. Oh, Krishna, where are you both? Restless, Queen Yasoda was held still by four women. Her heart had burst into flames. She sighed and sighed. Logic had no place in her thinking. All she said was, alas, alas. So we heard that Krishna had dived in. We heard what happened to Nanda Maharaj. We heard what the Brijbasis were thinking. Now what had happened when Krishna had entered the tunnel that would lead to the abode of Varuna? Now please hear of the activities of Sri Krishna, the beloved of Braja's goddesses of fortune, who, when having passed through the deep underwater tunnels, he finally arrived at Varuna's abode. The moment he perceived that Krishna had hurriedly entered his abode, Varuna rushed to greet and honor him. No one could even look at Krishna's form, which, although generally dark like a glistening cloud, was now red with anger. No one could look at Sri Krishna's eyes, which, although they generally destroy the darkness of illusion, now glistened like two lightning flashes that would blind anyone who dared look at them. Sri Krishna's words were like thunder that reverberates during the cosmic destruction at the Kalpa's end, thus like a cloud, lightning, and thunder. Sri Krishna filled everyone in Varuna's court with wonder. When, contemptuously calling out, "In what hole does that jackal Varuna hide?" Sri Krishna, the glory of Nanda's dynasty, entered the kingdom of Varuna. His great effulgence pained any eye that would look at it. Frightened Varuna let out a flowing stream of loud calls. He wrapped the cloth around his neck. He offered his obeisances, his forehead meeting the ground. He folded his hands and fell down like a stick from afar. He offered his obeisances to Krishna. Seeing their master act in such a humble way, the servants of Varuna also offered obeisances to Lord Krishna. Krishna's eyes were like newly blossomed red lotus flowers. All attractive Krishna stood before Varuna and asked, "Where is my noble father, who is always intent on performing noble deeds, pious activities?" Folding his hands, humble Varuna sweetly said, "O Supreme Personality of Godhead, your noble father, who is the best of all swan-like saintly persons, is present here. He was not taken to any other place. How may I serve your servants? Please teach me how to serve them." Peaceful at heart, Krishna said, "A person who punishes insignificant persons breaks his own power into pieces. Therefore, without the slightest touch of delay, at once show me the lotus that is my father's feet. The lotuses that are my father's feet." Varuna said, "As you command, O master who rips into shreds the sufferings of the poor and fallen." Then Varuna had a silk carpet placed on the pathway that led from Sri Krishna's feet to the splendid palace where Vraja's King Nanda was staying. And bringing Nanda before Sri Krishna, who is the glorious hero of the coward people, Varuna said, "My dear Lord Krishna, Govinda, be merciful to me. Here is your father. You can take him back immediately. I know your position is glorious. How can I disobey you? How can anyone impose his will upon you?" In this way, Lord Krishna freed Nanda of all fears of being bound by Varuna's ropes. Nanda, at this time, was completely oblivious to the fact that he was in Varuna's kingdom. He was simply only meditating upon Krishna. How wonderful Krishna was. How many wonderful pastimes Krishna had performed. But then, the fragrance of Krishna's body entered his nostrils. And King Nanda, his rapt meditation on Lord Narayan was broken. And he returned to external consciousness. At this, the courtiers in Varuna's assembly were filled with wonder. Nanda slowly opened his eyes and saw Sri Krishna's glorious face. And seeing Krishna, he burst into tears. And seeing through a film of tears, he thought he must be dreaming. Sri Krishna touched his father's feet. He hugged him. He picked him up and said, "Father, I have come." Krishna and Nanda were both overcome with emotion. Still, fearing the smiles and jokes of the people all around him, Sri Krishna kept all tears and displays of emotion tightly within his heart, and he would not display them openly. To King Nanda he said, "Father, look all around you." Looking everywhere around him, Vraja Kings Nanda thought, "Where are we?" Confused, embarrassed, he gazed at his son's face. Sri Krishna said to him, "Father, as we have traveled here, so we will now return to our land of Vraja. Please don't think of anything else. Simply walk ahead, carefully moving the lotus flower of your feet." As Nanda and Krishna were about to depart, Varuna said in a voice choked with emotion, "O Krishna, you are supremely merciful. Please give me one of two things. Please give me either punishment or give me your mercy, but please do not let my offense to you remain unforgiven within me." As Krishna and Nanda were about to begin their journey, Varuna came before them for a moment. He placed many services before their feet. He bowed before them. He made a passage of dry land that reached all the way to Braja. He sent servants bearing glorious ornaments and other gifts to accompany Krishna and Nanda. Then, his heart flooded with bliss, he danced for one muhurta for 48 minutes. By this time, waiting on the riverbank, the breathless people of Braja were on the verge of death. Then they saw Krishna, Nanda, and Varuna's servants suddenly and cheerfully appear in the water. The people of Braja at once fainted in bliss. Balaram alone approached Krishna and Nanda. To Braja's king Nanda, Balaram offered respectful obeisances. When joyful Nanda hugged him, Balaram forgot the external world. For some moments, he was stunned in bliss. Again and again, Krishna offered obeisances to Balaram. Krishna at once circumambulated his mother. He gave her the sweet nectar of his touch. Again and again, he glanced at the people of Braja. One by one, each and every one of them approached Krishna. Nanda approached Krishna. Then all the people of Braja met with Krishna and Nanda. Overcome with bliss, the people did not know one person from another. Only Krishna and Nanda remembered who was who. When the mooing of the cows, the conversations of the throngs of people, the showers of flowers from Swargaloka, and the sounds of musical instruments dancing and hundreds of prayers being recited became a great tumult, with tumultuous sounds crashing against each other, Sri Balaram led the cows to their barn. And then, speaking with sweet words, he convinced the coward people to return to their homes. Then, after giving King Nanda a splendid sitting place, and after giving appropriate sitting places to every person there, Sri Balaram asked Sri Krishna to describe his journey. Hearing Sri Krishna's words, Sri Balaram repeated them to the cowherd people. By his own wish, inviting the brahmanas, satisfying them with a delicious feast, and offering them gifts, the gifts they desired to receive, Nanda prayed for their blessings so that his observance of the vow of Ekadasi might be concluded properly and without any fault. Speaking many words, the brahmanas blessed him and reassured him that he had properly observed the Ekadasi Vrata. Then, making a great tumult of joyful sounds, everyone returned to Braja. His two sons at his side as he walked on the path, Braja's King Nanda shone forward with great splendor. Then, on another day, when Krishna was not present, this is that the chapter that we read just before, in another assembly, the leaders of the coward men asked Braja's King Nanda about the recent wonderful events, because we heard that they went to the... Well, that was before this. But anyway, this is how it's described. King Nanda replied by speaking many verses describing the glory of the demigod Varuna. Glory the people of earth cannot see. King Nanda said, O friends, please listen. And I will describe how the residents of Varuna's realm are very devoted to Krishna. Hearing these descriptions, the people became filled with wonder. Considering that Sri Krishna may be the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, the people thought, because of his eternal and imperishable and supreme knowledge and glory, Sri Krishna must be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even so, he is the resting place of the great treasure of wonderful feelings of love, love that brings us great bliss. They thought, we are overcome with the thirst, of his grace. Again and again, he delights our hearts. Will he allow us to see him always, to see him without hindrance? Aware that the coward men considered him their own friend and kinsman, they did not think themselves any different from him. Sri Krishna became overwhelmed with feelings of compassion, with the idea that he himself is dependent on the cowherd people of Vrindavan. He thought, now, because of what my father has said about his experiences in Varuna Loka, all the people of Braja, they know now that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now they yearn to see my glories and opulences, although it is not possible for them to see them all. They do not see the glories of and opulences of Varuna, nor do they see the glories and opulences of Swargaloka, because they have descended to the material world with its higher and lower destinations, created by various kinds of ignorance, desire, and action. The coward people, their true knowledge block, think that I am an ordinary conditioned soul. The condition of the people of Braja is described in these words of the Bhagavatam, 10.11.58. All the elderly coward men, including Nanda Maharaj, used to talk of the wonderful activities of Lord Krishna and Balaram, and they were always so much absorbed in these talks that they forgot the threefold miseries of material existence. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said They, the people of Braja, have dedicated everything to Krishna. Their lives, their property, their affection, their activities, everything was for Krishna. In Srimad Bhagavatam it is said the inhabitants of Vrindavan had sacrificed everything for Krishna, simply being captivated by the lotus eyes of the Lord. In Srimad Bhagavatam it is also said, "My Lord, sometimes I'm puzzled," this is by Brahma, "as to how your lordship will be able to repay in gratitude the devotional service of the residents of Braja. Although I know that you are the supreme source of all benedictions, I am puzzled to know how you'll be able to repay all the services that you are now receiving from these residents in Vrindavan. I think of how you are so kind, so magnanimous, that even Putana, who came to cheat you by dressing herself as a very affectionate mother, was awarded liberation and the actual post of mother. And I remember how other demons belonging to the same family, such as Agasura and Bakasura, were also favored with liberation. Under the circumstance," Brahma says, "I am puzzled. The residents of Vrindavan have given you everything. They've given you their bodies, their minds, their love, their homes. Everything is utilized for your purpose. So how will you be able to repay their debt? You have already given yourself to Putana. I surmise that you shall ever remain a debtor to the residents of Vrindavan, being able to repay their service." From these verses, it should be understood that Lord Krishna thinks the love of the people of Braja feel for me is the greatest of all love. It brings even me under their control. The glory of their love is not like the glory manifested by the illusory material energy. I cannot bear to hear the statements that the love of the people of Braja feel for me is ordinary like the love others feel. I know their love for me is the great net of loving desires and affectionate activities. The truth is, here Krishna is speaking his own mind. The truth is that for kalpas and kalpas, from past time, without any beginning, I am deeply in debt to the people of Braja. Even if I give all my wealth and opulence, still it is not enough to repay the love that they have given me. If I give to them all my supreme wealth, all my opulence, and all of my glory, and if I give it to them again and again, many times over, still is not enough to repay my debt to them. The glory and opulence possessed by Varuna filled my father with wonder. That thought makes me unhappy. As I look into this matter, I see that they love me more than I love them. With the help of Yogamaya, who wishes that all good may come to them, I will now reveal to the people of Braja the supreme opulences that they already possess. After thinking in this way, on another day, at the place named Purudwar, in an assembly of coward people, including his wonderfully learned father, an assembly that had just heard the Adivarara Purana spoken by an expert reciter, Sri Krishna explained that by bathing during the full moon day of the month of Kartik at Brahma Kund, which would later grant the fulfillment of desires to Akura, the coward people would attain the fulfillment of all their desires. Then Krishna took all the coward people with him. He went to that lake in the morning of the appropriate day. After arriving there with all the coward men, after bathing in the water, after emerging from the water, after stepping onto the dry land, and after removing the covering power of his illusory potency, Sri Krishna revealed to the coward men their original home, which is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss, which bears the name Golok, which is beyond the touch of the material energy, and the supremely beautiful spiritual sights and nectar scents, touch and sounds of which cannot be perceived even by advanced transcendentalists. As a curtain is removed to reveal a splendidly beautiful and colorful painting, so Sri Krishna removed the curtain of Maya and revealed the spiritual world, which bears the name of Brahmaloka, because it is the abode of Sri Krishna, the Supreme Brahman, whose spiritual form resembles the shape of human beings. Seeing themselves in that spiritual world, and seeing Krishna, who is like a glistening tilak mark adorning the forehead of his family, also there in their midst, and seeing the Vedas personified, also there reciting many prayers glorifying Sri Krishna's Gokul pastimes, beginning with his pastimes of his birth, the cowherd men of Braja, now filled with wonder and free of all grief, felt bliss at every moment. After showing all this, Goloka, there, the spiritual world, after showing all this to the cowherd men of Braja, whose hearts were filled with love for him, Sri Krishna, the enemy of the demons, in order to complete his pastimes, which included the killing of many demons, took the cowherd men out of Goloka and brought them again to the earth. The speaker of this narrative, Snigdhakanta, then brought the narration to its conclusion by saying, O Nanda, O King of Braja, your son, who defeats the kings of all the planets, thus showed you and your followers your own original home. I offer my respectful obeisances to Sri Krishna, who wears a garland of forest flowers and revealed to the cowherd men the truth that they are actually residents of the spiritual world of Goloka. So Krishna showed them, he showed them that Goloka Vaikuntha planet, which is their home. I think I was saying more that it was not like their home, Vrindavan, but it seems from what we read that it was more like their home. That was their home, that's where they would be. But the intimacy of Vrindavan was fully present in their earthly pastimes. Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments? Did you look at Vishwanath's comment to that verse?
17.
Yes, could you translate that? Because the translations, I think I became a little confused in that one. Could you?
Which one?
On the 17. Yes. Can you do it? No, I'm sorry. Not. Let me just see. I think it is 17. Yes, 17.
It was pretty much what you were saying about the Koteshwara millionaire and getting the scent.
As soon as there's the touch of the opulence. Go and read it.
Having seen the Vaikuntha Loka,
because I'll repeat it so it's recorded properly in this.
They experienced the highest bliss. They have seen the Goloka Vrindavan situated in Vaikuntha.
They had seen Goloka Vrindavan situated in Vaikuntha.
Which is understood to have the same nature as Vrindavan.
On earth. Oh, excuse me, it's Vrindavan on. Boma Vrindavan, does it say?
Doesn't mention.
Just Vrindavan.
Just as a millionaire, sometimes having lost all his wealth.
Just as a millionaire, having lost all his wealth.
By the will of providence.
By the will of providence.
Having seen some trace of his wealth. Becomes overwhelmed by supreme bliss. The same way they experience the same.
Yes. So the clue to their wealth is that they saw Krishna there. Again, please.
So there they have seen Krishna feeling, where is where is they are feeling, where is Krishna for whose lotus face covered by decorated by sweat, we are ready to give up millions of our lives. Then they have seen him
glorified or praised by the personified Vedas, something like that.
They have seen Krishna who was there, praised by the personified Vedas, and they have become very, they became very astonished.
Yes. Effulgent beings. Yeah. Yes. Sorry for putting you under that pressure. But is it? So the there's something special about the experience that they have. It appears in Boma Vrindavan. That is somewhat different from the experience they're having of Krishna in Golok.
You said it's a bit more rigid.
Yeah, but I just want to get it from the commentaries, because that was how I explained it. Does that come out in the commentary?
He is praised there, and it's mentioned this is a scent or a trace of their wealth.
Yes. So they have something that's even higher than this. Is that indicated? Yes. So that's the point. So what they have in Boma Vrindavan is what they're going to have forever. The most intimate, personal, unobstructed by any awe and reverence. They have that relationship with Krishna. And that is the sweetest of all sweet things. And by seeing Krishna being worshipped and Krishna being filled, seeing Krishna being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is not that their intimacy shifts in the slightest bit. This is the nature of their love. It doesn't shift in the slightest bit. So the Brijbasis are... There's so many different types of consciousness in existence, and their consciousness is the topmost. Okay, we'll end here. Yes, did you have a question?
Vrindavan is like the original Vrindavan. Gopal Vrindavan here is a reflection.
No, we can't call...
Replica.
Replica is a much better word. It's not a reflection, because a reflection lacks substance.
Yeah.
While a replica is exactly, it's filled with the same substance as the original.
So if they went to, they were viewing in Goloka, there wouldn't be any on reverence in Goloka Vrindavan.
Well, that's the little tricky point that I'm bringing out. Yeah.
Because there was.
There was. And therefore that somewhat esoteric comment by... But there's no, it's not in their consciousness, that's the point. Because even when the demigods, we heard earlier how they offered prayers, they came and did an abhishek, so that was in Vrindavan. So there is that, but the coward boys, they weren't at all impressed by that. They were just impressed that Krishna is so wonderful, our friend is so wonderful, it didn't diminish the intimacy of their love. Something like that. That's the best I could do in explanation.
So that consciousness, or the place of that consciousness, where the residents of Vrindavan control everything, because they control Krishna, is Vrindavan. And that's the Vrindavan that it is all attractive. Perhaps that's the best I can do explaining it.
You said that love of God is measured by intimacy and relationship.
Yes.
Love diminished by opulence.
Yes.
So in that sense, when they get a glimpse of that opulence in Goloka, it enhances their intimacy.
Everything enhances their intimacy. Just we should glimpse this and understand that this is what is meant. This is our inheritance, so to speak. This is what the gift of Mahaprabhu is. This is what the followers of Mahaprabhu, Srila Prabhupada, want to give us. But it is not cheap. The cost is simply this. It's very simple in a sense, but it's everything in a specific mood. And it is the sweetest of the sweetest. So in the Bhagavatam, from Canto 1 to Canto 10, so many different consciousnesses are described. The Brihadbhagavatamrita specifically describes so many different consciousnesses. But here, by the time we get to Braja, the topmost consciousness is described. That's what we're hearing about. And how Krishna interacts with that topmost consciousness. And then in the following chapters, the topmost consciousness of the topmost place and the topmost position of the topmost devotee, Aradhya Bhagavan, Hanayo Aradhito Nunam Bhagavan Harishwarayam Novahaya Govinda Pitoyam Hanayo Raha, who worships Krishna in the most pleasing way. The topmost of all the gopis of Srimati Radharani, that is even described. Not so that we can aspire to take that position, oh, this is the topmost, so therefore I should do that, but just serve the servants of 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 those who know the art of pleasing Krishna in the most intimate and wonderful, loving way. Usually, when you read self-help literature, they tell you about this success story and that success story to inspire you for your own success so you can become like them. But the devotional mood taught by Mahaprabhu was different than that. We just want to serve. Serve those who really know the art of giving Krishna pleasure. Serve their servants, serve their servants' servants. It is so selfless, it is so pure. Yeah.
It seems that even here in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, you need some special commentary by acharyas to understand what's happening. Why? It seems that the Bhagavatam is still hiding some of the truths about Krishna. Like this, in the final verses of this 28th chapter, they're not so straightforward in themselves. You get Sri Krishna's commentary to,
yes,
to see what's happening.
Yes.
Why is Bhagavatam still hiding Krishna here?
Because bhakti is hidden in the hearts of the devotees, and you need keys to unlock. You need the keys to unlock it. And Krishna, this is the meaning of what Parokshaval is. And Krishna likes things done in that way, and he likes to satisfy everyone. So the impersonalists can even read, like Vishwanath is pointing out, and Jiva Goswami points out, that that to interpret the position of the Brajabasis according, because you could give that direct the direct translation of the verse almost as it's given here, and you'd think, oh, this really shows impersonalism, because the people who are intimately connected with Krishna, they're also in bodies, so therefore they're also traveling from place to place to place, wandering, trying to fulfill their desires, because everything is one ultimately. So it's still, even in the 10th canto, you can pull out impersonalism. So people get what they want. So the devotees try to make their desires very, very focused on what they want and clearly what they don't want. So that desire the desires on this level to serve Krishna in a in the most pleasing way, that has to be learned and through association, proper association. So my response to your question is yes, even in the 10th canto. Even in the 10th canto, we need the commentaries of Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas and Vishwanath. And then we need so much mercy to actually imbibe that. We have to have a receptive heart, but we need more than that too. We need mercy, a lot of mercy. We should do our part and make our heart clean and receptive, but we need mercy. The receptive heart will attract Krishna's mercy, but yet it is causeless. Anything else? So the Brijbasis, the purport here of this last pastime is that the Brijbasis already have it. They have everything. They have the highest consciousness. Because they have the intimacy of love with Krishna, and it's so powerful. It is so powerful that it completely controls Krishna. The absolute truth, the all-powerful one. And they don't want anything from him. When we think of placing someone else in our control, we think immediately what we can get from them. And therefore in this world, people, deeply fear being under the control of another, because they know the exploitive tendency of souls in this world. But the Brijbasis have Krishna completely under their control. And they don't have the slightest thought of taking anything from him. They just are motivated. They are impelled fully by their special, unique love. So the question I had on this commentary and the point that I seem to push as the conclusion is that they showed Goloka, the final, the destination. They were asking about their place, their destination. So they're shown some place as if that's a higher destination than what they already have. As if.
They don't like it.
So does that come out clearly in Vishwanath's commentary? They already have it. So the point is they showed their home. This is what the little bit of confusing point. They're shown their home. They're asked what's going to be their destination. And their destination is just what they have, what they're already living in, where they have the full intimate relationship with Krishna. So this is the topmost.
The only thing that seems to not have come through in the translations is that they were searching for Krishna there, in the Vaikuntha Loka. And then finally they found him.
They were searching for Krishna there in the Vaikuntha.
And they finally found him, and they were surprised to see some effulgent personalities praising him. It was like Vrindavan, but some effulgent personalities were praising him, so they were thinking, who are these? We don't see them here in this Vrindavan. And then again, it seems like Krishna, but he doesn't want to embrace us, he doesn't seem to be eager to eat and everything. So that was their feeling.
They're just searching for Krishna. They're just searching for Krishna. When we become like that, and we can't artificially do it, it can't be artificially done. But when we become like that, Krishna's reciprocations will become clear.
So it seems they were shown not the Madhurya Vrindavan, but they were shown the Aishwarya Vrindavan.
Yeah, that's what I always intuited, but it doesn't come out clearly in any of the translations of the commentaries. But does it come out? Do you see it there in the commentary?
It just says Vaikuntha Vrindavan.
Yeah. Which is what they already had. So their destination was what they've already had. It's like taking a... You're going to go to the best place and you have to board this airplane, and you get in the airplane, and it takes you all over and all over, and then and lands you back where you just started from. There's no place like home. So let us hear the Bhagavatam, let us become purified, and let us strongly desire to go home and serve there. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Oh, Gopal has sent you some mercy.